Welcome, fellow confidence crusaders, neuro nerds, and success equalizers. This is your podcast, Real Confidence. I'm your host, Alyssa DeVere, and I'll be sharing a bit of basic brain science, some surprising social secrets, and a touch of tough love. Why? Because I believe confidence is everyone's fundamental right and choice. So let's get to it. Crisis. Just the word kind of makes me a little itchy, and I am excited to bring to you an expert who can help us deal with crises better. Her name is Christine Scott. Christine, welcome to the Real Confidence Podcast.
Thank you so much.
Now, you have experience, firsthand experience, as well as now professional experience dealing with conflict and crisis. Can you give a little background how and why it happened?
Oh, I was the most crisis averse person you ever met. But that didn't stop me from taking a job with AmeriCorps, working with young people who lived outside, doing a meal program for them. And oh my gosh, things got scary and I got overwhelmed very quickly when I realized these guys are in conflict and in crisis all the time. And I didn't know how to handle it. So that's when I started leaning in, like, okay, I've got to figure this out because I'm either way too scared or way too aggressive or both all the time around them.
So you used that scare word twice, and we talk a lot about fear at the American Confidence Institute as it relates to all our confidence issues. What was so scary for you? What was the, you know, what was that that was like, oh, I got to do something?
Because they were in what I might call mammal mode all the time. Their lives were under threat all the time. They're living outside. They're having, you know, fights with each other, with everybody around them. And so as this, you know, white chick from a small town, I was completely overwhelmed. It, to me, my body was telling me that I was about to die.
Oh my goodness. So you said mammal mode, we call it caveman mode because it is
okay.
Primitive brain part that is doing
yes.
For sure. Let's define crisis though, because not all of us are living outside, at, you know, in some foreign place, but there's crisis all the time around everyone, I think, these days, let alone in the workplace. So give us a little baseline. How do you see crisis showing up now with your clients and for yourself?
Yeah. Because the pandemic took such a toll on our mental well-being, the number of resources that we have on deck to handle some type of conflict or some type of disagreement, or even a sense that there's a threat to our status within the workplace, those are just shot. And so every little thing, every little coworker that's not happy with us feels like it's a threat to our survival. So it feels like there's a lot more crisis thinking as people interpret just human interactions in the workplace these days.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it because I remember many years ago, actually having a fight with my husband because he was like, why can't you just let things roll off your back, right? And I thought, well, maybe it's a female issue. Maybe it's that, you know, I'm more empathetic or emotionally intelligent or whatever label you want to shove on it. But I was like, oh, that person, they're out to get me. They don't like me. You know, that was like kind of instinctual. You'd read an email or a text and you, right? Mm-hmm. So is it a female issue or is this gender neutral?
No, it's gender neutral. Threats to our status, our standing, our value feel in our body the same way as somebody holding a gun at us. I mean, our mammal self, our caveman self doesn't know the difference between threats to status and threats to life.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's just kind of right in my zone of love here because we talk about physical and emotional fear and the trigger into the amygdala and the decision point that needs to be made. So I'm totally in line with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also find it fascinating that you're noticing that there's been an escalation in this and the lack of cognitive, maybe it's the net, you know, where all of a sudden you don't have the ability to kind of say, oh, you know what? She really didn't mean that in that text. She was just writing too fast, right? Do you attribute it to the crises or the stress maybe of the last couple of years? Do you think that it's going to get better or we're stuck in this like reverse devolution ability to handle everyday stress.
I see some people really leaning in and noticing this and getting curious about, like, why am I stressed out all the time? Right. And I see others just internalizing that message. And to get back to your earlier question about where gender comes from, what role gender plays in that, often women have had a longer time internalizing other messages around our value and our role within the social group. And so if you throw insecurity on top of insecurity, we might be more likely to go, oh, it's about me. And what's interesting is when I was running a shelter for homeless young people, I started getting curious about everybody who I thought was after me. Every person I supervised, every person that I worked with, and I would just say, "Huh, you don't look happy right now. Did I do something in your direction that I just need to clear up with you?" 90% of the time, it wasn't. It had nothing to do with me. And so I really encourage people, just perception check before you assume, because our mind is great at just filling in that blank, that lack of information.
I'm 100% agreeing. And there is this validation checkpoint, right? Like we live in our own set of truth, and oftentimes it's just not even close to the truth from the other person. So verifying or validating if that's how they feel, absolutely. What happens typically, and I say what happens to you, but maybe more to the clients that you're serving, they're in a situation where they're in that reaction mode. What kinds of impact do you see as a result? Like, let's talk about the ugly side of it for a minute.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And all of your physiological research on what happens when that cortisol and that adrenaline is running through your body and how your mind is just this problem-solving machine that's now looking for the problem and now adding a definition to how this person or how the situation is out to get you. And it's just a self-perpetuating cycle. And people are worthless for about 20 minutes after that amygdala hijack, at least 20 minutes, possibly more, because they then find new facts, right? New clues as to the situation. And so it just spirals.
Yeah, so it's that moment where you go, you see, of course she hates me, right? Or my boss really doesn't like me, right? Like you just start finding additional evidence, right?
Yes.
But let's again kind of call out that it is a psychological detriment, right? Like you start ruminating, you start going into a cycle of unproductivity, but there's some real physical impact too. People constantly complaining about the aches and pains that there's so many doctors, there's so many researchers that will say it's because of the stress, not because your physiological deficiency, right? So constant crisis, obviously, or maybe we can call it chronic crisis. You see a lot of that now, or are you think that this is something that somebody has created as a result of just being under stress, or what kind of when you talk to people who, I mean, you get pulled into corporate environments, you do a lot of work with people who are in this kind of mode of crisis and then subsequently conflict. Is it oftentimes self-perpetuated?
That's a great question. I think we all have a lot of freedom in how we respond to our environment. And globally, we're going through this shift in our relationship to our workplace, right? Our generation and those above us had a workplace model that was very top-down, very much like machines as bots, basically humans as bots, right? And that's shifting, thank goodness. But in that workplace dynamic shift is also a lot of this old school, I think, kind of reasserting itself around, no, you will show up to work and not work from home. No, you will do this. And so the environment is extra tense right now in a lot of workplaces, and people are less resourced. And so I see both of those things leading to this increase in workplace crisis.
So, can you pull out some specific examples of the kinds of things that get escalated to you so that people know that this is, you know, they're probably going, oh, that's happened to me, or I'm close to that. But I think there's comfort in knowing that something's normal, even if it's not a good thing, right? So what kind of scenarios or what kind of situations do you see pretty regularly?
See, people who are so upset with their coworker that they have to go take a break in their car and just cry. Yeah. People who have long email threads all about how this person did that wrong and, you know, shaming and blaming and fault finding back and forth in these incredibly long email threads that are not professional, not productive. Huge waste of energy. You know, you see people who are elevating interpersonal conflict to their supervisors or their supervisor's supervisor, in a way that they're looking for fault with the other party, but they're not looking for resolution. And, you know, these supervisors aren't often any better able to handle that, right? So yeah, there's a lot of disconnect happening right now.
Yeah, so some might call it finger pointing, but I actually look at it and it is that cave person being very defensive. It's, you know, I'm not wrong. I'm not the one who caused this problem. That person did, right? A lot of deferral or deflection. I'm hesitant to ask you this, but I'm going to. Does it get any better as we age? Do we get smarter?
Yeah, it does, because we become less identified with our role. I don't know if you remember, but your first, you know, in your 20s and your 30s, that job title felt really important. Once you start getting up into your, you know, late 40s, early 50s, you start realizing, oh, I'm so much bigger than my job title, hopefully. And that gives people less capacity to status attack. Like when they do, it just doesn't stick to you in the same way.
Yeah. So I know you have some data around that. Pull it out and then I'll pull out some of the ACI data too.
Okay. Well, for women, for example, we are much more likely to not believe that we're valued in the workplace because of all of the internalized stuff that we've received as female identified people until we're somewhere in our 40s. Then that's when the confidence gap shows, like narrows. And there's this great thing by the Harvard Business Review that actually polled people. They did, like, you know, 360 evaluations, like, what do you think about your manager? And what they found is the 16 traits of leadership that the Harvard Business Review adopts and recommends, women outperform men in like 12 out of the 16. Really impressive stuff, right? Do we know that? Have we internalized that? No. Right? So it's really fabulous to look at, oh, as you age, you get more confident.
Yeah. So we, you know, I laugh because actually I think that Harvard Business Review study is actually in our resource library and some other places, and maybe even in the books, but definitely in the books actually. But we know, we've done it a bunch of times now, the study that says that we don't really peak, and we being men, women, and non-binary until we're 60.
As far as our confidence level?
As far as our confidence level. But there is definitely a trough of doubt that actually happens early 40s. And then you're busy, maybe you have kids, you're worried about your career and your last, you know, part of your life that you want, you know, your career ascending and all that. But we start to realize, like you said, I am not my job, right? You know, like the old adage, you are what you eat, you are not what you work, right? So we start to finally realize that. But I think another thing really happens too, is we realize that everybody has the same confidence crisis that we have all the time, right? So those stupid emails, you look at it and you start looking at least I did. And I was like, does this person realize how foolish they look? I'm not adding to that. I'm not contributing. I'd like to, because I'm mad, but I'm not going to do it there, right? So I think we get a little bit smarter. So to help everyone get smarter now, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to give some time for our sponsor. And when we come back, Christine, I'm going to ask you for some of your best tips, other than not reacting to those ugly emails. What can people do when they're feeling like they're in a crisis and they literally do want to hit the keys hard? We'll come right back and do that. This podcast was sponsored by the American Confidence Institute. ACI uses basic brain science to teach you not what, but how to think with more confidence. ACI is endorsed by top universities and business experts, and it is accredited by the Society for Human Resource Management and the International Coaching Federation. Learn more about ACI's uniquely empowering keynotes, workshops, online training, and coaching certification at www.AmericanConfidenceInstitute.com. All right, I'm excited because I want to hear, Christine, your tips. Things that when somebody's in that cortisol-filled moment, they just literally want to bang a nasty email, or they want to scream or yell or whatever that reaction is. What should we do to avoid or deal with that crisis?
Thank you. So if you're already in caveman mode, all of those hormones are already pumping through your body. Sorry, it's too late. You do not want to engage. It's just like CPR first aid. The scene is not safe for you to proceed. So if you feel that amped up, you feel that energy flowing through you, take yourself out of the situation and allow for a good 20 minutes before you're able to be human again. That's how long it's going to take to work through that. And if you can work through that with your body, like by moving your body, by getting out of the situation, great. If you haven't gone down that path yet, if you haven't been totally hijacked by your hormones, there are a few things you can do in the moment that will stop you from getting hijacked. One of them is the neurovascular hold, which is your hand on your forehead and the back of your scalp with gentle pressure. Do that with some deep breathing. About 30 seconds of that will tell your body you're in control. The other thing I recommend to people is engage with crisis on your own terms. A lot of times we assign false urgency to the situation. Somebody comes in and says, hey, I need blah, 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 blah. And you feel like, oh, I have to drop everything. No, you don't. You get to say, wow, that sounds really important. I can give that my undivided attention in about 20 minutes. Does that work for you? So, you know, just be mindful that you actually have a lot of choice in when and how you respond to these requests of you.
I love it. And again, my book, Confidence is a Choice, is like you could have written the book yourself. So thank you for making that statement about we do have agency. We just don't always use it. You know, it was interesting. Last week, I had a very big crisis in my business with somebody who had reacted like a cave person and all this. And I was really hurt and I was really angry. And a very dear friend of mine said, let it be, just let it be. And I was like, I can't. She's like, sleep on it. Right? And I was like, I can't. And that like immediate urgency to do something. But, you know, again, I was smart enough to realize that I was in that crisis, reached out to her, let it go. Next day, I, you know, said to the person, I really would like to talk about this. And we did. And I also said, you know what, please don't do that again. That didn't feel good. If there's an issue, come and let's talk about it. And he, a younger person, said, okay. So, you know, maybe even last tip, make it a teaching moment. And when you do get to be in control, celebrate it, share that back with somebody and say, hey, look what I did. I didn't kill, knock his block off. No, I mean it. Cause that's the way you kind of remind yourself next time it happens, I can do this. Right.
So yes, definitely.
Speaking of, I can do this. I love your words today, your advice, your tips. And I know that you offer some free consultation. So tell people how they can find you and what the next step in something like that would be like.
Yeah, just find me on my website, which is www.seattleconflictresolution.com. I do offer a 30-minute consultation to folks about workplace situations and trainings for their teams, just to like kind of inquire, like, what does your team most need and see if I can be helpful to you.
I love it. Thank you so much for being here and sharing a little bit of this wonderful wisdom. And I think I'm going to call you next time, Christine, when my when my crisis bell goes off, because not only have you been a soothing voice here on the pod, but your advice has been wonderful. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Alyssa.
Before we totally wrap up, I want to let you know that full transcripts and show notes for this and other Real Confidence episodes can be found on www. www.americanconfidenceinstitute.com/podcast. I also want to remind you once again that the best way to get confidence is to give it to others, and you can do it just by liking and sharing this episode on your preferred podcast and social media channels. You can even give me some confidence by noting topics you'd like me to consider for the future. So for now, this is Alyssa DeVere. Thank you for helping to bring more confidence to the world. Master editing done by Ben Weinstein, with original music performed and composed by Jeff Mitchell. Real Confidence is a production of American Confidence Institute. All rights reserved.